Human beings are much more than flesh and blood, and as you become aware of this and start to believe that you have a soul, your connection with the angels will blossom. This is a quote from Angels in My Hair, a book written by today's guest, Lorna Byrne, an Irish mystic. Since birth and throughout her life, Lorna has literally been hanging out with angels. And she's here to tell us unemployment is up and it's time to be still, cock that inner ear, listen and ask for help. Give an angel a job already. I'm Robin Clare. Stay tuned. This is Tributaries. Lorna, welcome.
You're welcome, Robin. I'm delighted to be speaking with you and your listeners.
Usually unemployment isn't a good thing, but in this case, it's something good to be aware of anyway, isn't it?
It is, because there's millions of unemployed angels. God has poured them down onto the world because we actually need them. That is the gatekeeper of your soul. And remember, your guardian angel never leaves you, not for one second. I see angels with everyone. I see, when I go out in the street, I see the light of the guardian angel right behind people. I always say about three steps. But I see other angels as well. And it doesn't matter what religion or nationality or color of their skin. That's something really important to remember. Every single human being has a guardian angel, and everybody has a soul. So you have nothing to lose by saying to yourself, well, I think I should believe.
As you say in your book, if you don't believe, question your skepticism. If you're cynical, question that.
I met a 16-year-old there at the book signing, and she told me she never realized she had a guardian angel at all, only for she had found the book and had read it. She was so excited and so delighted to realize that she had, and that she had help there. And that's actually for us all to discover. I suppose we have all forgotten, because at the moment I think we're all just so materialistic and we're not thinking of the spiritual side of ourselves. And I have met people, you know, that would say they're skeptic, you know, but they say to me, you know, when they have read the book, it has made them question. And isn't that the first step? You know, that's a wonderful thing to hear. And people saying, you know, the book has changed their lives and given them back hope and belief again. You know, I made them smile. I love to hear that, because that's one message the angels are always giving people, and saying to them, smile, open that door for someone and smile. Or if you're sitting on a train or a bus, you know, even the taxi driver, give them a smile. It fills people's life with light, you know. It kind of gives them joy. It helps them to realize, oh, wow, someone is smiling, especially if they're very down in themselves. And they could have been asking, you know, their guardian angel, you know, for a sign, show me hope. And a smile is hope.
We may just feel this invisible presence that really does tend to draw that person next to us into our lives and into our existence, and helping us to know we aren't alone, not only because of the angels, but then it draws people closer as well.
It does. It draws people closer to us. You know, I've heard from so many people now, and they're saying, you know, they have started to think and to remember at times when they felt peaceful within themselves, or when peace came over them during a bad situation, and they're realizing now it was their angel. And that's again for us to recognize it. And a lot of people would say, you know, they do strongly believe as well, because they feel the presence of an angel around them at different times. And I have to say, it's your guardian angel, you know, that never leaves you for one second, and is the gatekeeper of your soul. But it's your guardian angel that allows in other angels, and it is your guardian angel that allows in the soul of a loved one, someone that you may have lost and felt close to. And I always feel a little embarrassed, but the angels have told me to say it. We feel the presence of a loved one that would have passed on more so than we would any angel. And that's why your guardian angel allows in the soul of a loved one. And more important, your soul. You have your human body, it dies and rots away in the ground, but you live because you have a soul. That's a good thing for people to remember, that there's more to life.
You've been traveling through America this summer. What has the reception been like? Is it on par with Ireland or the UK or other places you've been?
I think at parts of it has. It's like, you know, people are coming up and saying they just heard about me or found out about the book and they saw it on the website or somebody just told them. I'm so surprised, but I know the angels are working very hard. Anyone I have met, I have told them they're ambassadors for the angels because that's what the angels have said, spread the word. It's just so wonderful to see here in America, the people are so different in so many ways. There's so many nationalities, such a mixture. Well, I tell you a little story. I was in one of the libraries. The light of someone's guardian angel kind of just glowed a little bit brighter, but I couldn't see the person. And I was wondering why, because they were behind the books. And then as I got up to the top, I saw it was a child because the child moved out and the light of the guardian angel opened up and it was just so, so beautiful. Sometimes it's just extremely hard to describe, but then I saw other angels and they were helping the child because the child was unable to walk properly. You know, it had to have, what would you call, a little walker. And I would say this child was about 8 years of age. But you could see the angels, you know, helping him to move his legs. And, you know, something to see that love and that care, that was so, so beautiful. And I have to remember, you know, the guardian angel said to me, Lorna, pray and ask for this young child so that he will grow with as much strength as possible. He's bright and intelligent. And I had to smile because I was walking around the bookshop and every now and then we would cross each other's paths. The first time the young child was with his mother. And then the second time it was with his father. But it was great to see the child, you know, moving with the walker and just watching the angels helping to lift his, all as I could say, his crooked legs.
I'm sure in a way that hit home for you as you explain and describe in your book, Angels in My Hair, that because you were so involved with this angelic realm when you were young, your attention wasn't fully on school.
Well, yes, I was a slow talker, and as I always say to everybody, from the moment that I opened my eyes as an infant, I saw the angels, but you have to remember I didn't know they were angels. I'd be reaching up trying to catch them. And it was as time passed, you know, especially when I would be playing with my little brother. And he changed age, but I was only a toddler, so it never dawned on me anything was different. Because remember, the angels were there as well. You know, at times my little brother would be an infant in my mom's arms when she'd be asleep in the chair. And it was one particular day when I was playing with him in front of the fire. And this particular day, he was older than I was. And we actually touched, our hands touched. Either his hand went into mine or mine went into his. But it was transparent. It was just all sparkly. It made me laugh. It was fun. And it was at that time that the angels told me that my little brother, who they had told me his name, because he used to talk to me, was Christopher. And, you know, that he was a soul. He was in heaven. And that they were angels and that I must keep everything a secret. And it was only as I got older I realized why, because I would hear people passing comments, you know, that I was slow, but the doctors had told my parents I was retarded and I was actually dyslexic, and I know I'm not even pronouncing that properly. You know, way back in Ireland then, they didn't know those things. So I would have been put into an institution and I wouldn't be here today talking to you.
I'm sure some might assume that such a connection might make for an easier life, but from your book I can see that your life is not really the epitome of a fairy tale, that's for sure.
No, I don't know actually why people would think, you know, people have often said that to me, you know, why isn't your life much easier? Why isn't everything perfect for you when you see the angels physically every day of your life and you talk to them? I wouldn't change my life for anything, you know. I'm human as well, and I have to live my human life as well. And to me, that is very, very important. I don't know why God and the angels chose me and not someone with intelligence or someone that, you know, was, you know, the parents had the money to educate them and all of that kind of thing. I'm just an ordinary person. That's what I always say to everybody. And I don't know why God didn't choose you or somebody else out there in the world, why he chose someone with learning difficulties.
It sounds like as a youngster, the angels gave you some very keen insights into the importance of observation. What did they teach you?
They actually taught me everything. You have to remember they have been my best friends, my companions, my teachers. They actually taught me how to see energy, the whole lot. They would teach me how to look at the trees and the plants and the flowers and see just more than that. You know, and the same with the animals. And all as I can say, they have been the best teachers. I don't think, you know, any human teacher could be as good as them at all. You know, and they explain things in simple ways. And at times I had to say to myself, why can't everybody else see the energy, you know, coming from plants and, you know, the trees and even the grass? And that's something we have to remember. Our planet is living as well. It's alive. And again, just like your guardian angel, being a gift from God. So I always say, don't throw that gift away. We have to take care of it.
Angels told you early on that if you acted out in any way, you could be institutionalized. I can easily imagine that it has happened to quite a few. And I'm wondering if you have feelings about this and or what the angels have shared with you. Do these otherworldly realms play a part in various diagnoses?
I actually don't know. I haven't actually asked them that question. But at times, sometimes when they would send someone to me to see, you know, if someone turned up at the door, they would actually tell me that this person is unstable. And as soon as I would know that, I would be very careful and gentle with them. Because if someone is unstable in any way, you have to be gentle. Because you have to remember their emotions are mixed up and they need love as well. It's one thing they have always taught me.
Explain what you know about soul knowing before consciousness, and does that have any relation to free will? Do you see it that way?
Well, that's one thing Michael used to often say, that my soul would know before my mind would know my consciousness, and God would even know before then. And sometimes they would come and answer the message before I even call them, and I used to laugh about that. You have to remember, it's your soul that is perfect. It's your soul that is that speck of light of God, and it fills every part of you. It is that part that your guardian angel talks to as well. Your guardian angel is the gatekeeper of your soul to try to do the best to keep you from doing wrong things. But the human part of us is the weak part, I suppose, that free will. You know yourself, if someone hurts you or is spiteful to you, you're inclined to hurt back. And I always say to people, just take one deep breath first and try and not hurt back.
Would you say because of your connection to the angels, your actions are derived from your soul? And can you tell the difference when it perhaps isn't?
I'm just so conscious of my soul. And on occasions, I'm allowed to see other people's souls. Our souls are absolutely beautiful, more beautiful than any angel. The imperfect part of us is the human part, and it is that part that makes the mistakes. It's that part that listens to the other side and, in a sense, hurts your soul. But your guardian angel loves you unconditionally, and I know when you say you're sorry and you try really hard, you know, your soul becomes stronger, you become stronger within yourself, even your conscious mind becomes stronger. But you have to try. And everything that is happening now, you know, even all the messages that are in the book, I used to say to the angels and to God, if, you know, the book had one person, if there was one message in it to help someone in the world, I would be very happy. But I have discovered, you know, there seems to be loads of messages in the book. Mm-hmm. I never realized it myself, you know. And it's part of evolution. It's part of the body and the soul becoming one or getting closer.
In your book, you say miracles are not dependent on the usual flow of cause and effect. What does that say about either miracles or cause and effect?
I suppose it depends on where you're coming from, how spiritually aware you are, you know, and how much growth has happened within you. I always say miracles can happen in disguise constantly. I would have children that would have been ill and got better, and then I would have children that wouldn't have got well, you know, and yet a miracle would happen within that. You know, it can be that the whole family, because of an ill child or an ill adult, you know, that is not going to live, that the whole family grows spiritually. And that's a miracle. That, again, can be the reason why, the main reason why they came to be here, to help their family grow spiritually, to become more conscious of their soul, and to help them to do as much good as possible in the world as they lived through a life.
It seemed you were already an adult when you started having people come to your door looking for healings and looking for solace during a difficult time. Could you know internally that you weren't responsible if a child did not get better?
Of course. And even the child knew as well. I had many a person who would say they're trying to tell their family, you know, that they're going to heaven, you know, that they'll be leaving soon, but the family just won't listen. But that's actually so natural. It is so natural of the family, you know, not to want to hear that part. You know, I'd often have children say, Lorna, will you tell my mom and dad? I'm telling them that my guardian angel says I'll be leaving soon. And, of course, I couldn't come straight out and say it. I'd have to be kind and gentle. So I would say to them always, you know, spend as much time as possible with your child. And, you know, they nearly always do. And afterwards I might hear from them, maybe a couple of years afterwards. And they would always say, the day you said that to us, they did understand, even though they didn't want to acknowledge it. And they would say, and we did hear him say or her say that the angel was getting ready to take them. You have to be so careful and gentle with parents and children, or even husbands and wives. If there's a husband who has a wife who's terminally ill, there's always miracles happening. I'd hear of so many people getting well again or been put into remission, and 10 years later they're still here with a great quality of life, and you pray and you ask for another 10 years. I'm always doing that. I don't give up.
It's pretty wild that at times your angels take on human form. Do you think that happens to all of us and we don't know it?
I do believe, you know, at times, you know, an angel will appear to someone in human form, but it's usually during time of great, you know, tragedy where something has happened dreadfully. You know, I know with the towers when the plane flew in, I've heard the story here in America that umpteen people swore they saw an angel, you know, a man playing a trumpet, and he would just appear and then disappear. And they always believe, you know, that's the story I'm hearing, that they believe this man was an angel. Because afterwards he disappeared altogether and no one could find him. And I think that's a beautiful story to, you know, to realize that, you know, there was millions of angels there.
You are set with your sensory apparatus to actually see the angels. And, you know, you can hear them, you see them, you can touch them oftentimes. Do you think that your impression or idea of Satan might be the same as someone with another frame of reference, perhaps coming up on their ego and then moving beyond the duality of this life?
I don't think so, because I see the other side as visibly as I see the angels, you know, so they're there, you know, and you have to remember it's your guardian angel that doesn't give up on you. Even, you know, people would say to me, even a bad person, a really, really bad person, that they have a guardian angel, their guardian angel is not giving up on them.
Yeah. I know some people channel and other people feel like God is talking to them. Is there a differentiation? And it sounds like for you there certainly is. Is it even important where this information's coming from? And is it easy for you to differentiate between an angel or maybe not such reliable information?
Well, what the angels and God have shown me is that the angels will only tell you what is good and what is right and will guide you correctly. If you're doing something bad, it is the other side. or you're being negative. Around the world, sometimes people will call an angel their guide, but they're angels. I know if I was brought up a Jew or a Muslim, I probably would be calling them something else. But they're there and they exist. And I think that is a wonderful thing to remember. And you're being guided. So, and you say to yourself, well, if ever I hear another voice that's telling me something wrong or negative, then I know it's not God's angels. You know, when I said to you, God's angels would tell me, you know, this person has a split personality or is unstable, I would never say to myself that was a negative thing. They were just telling me something of the person. Okay, so it is for you to recognize the difference. You have to remember your guardian angel allows, you know, the soul of a loved one in around you. Because sometimes we hear a loved one or a friend could have been, we hear them more than we hear an angel. So, but the soul doesn't stay with you like your guardian angel does. They come and go just like other angels, but your guardian angel stays with you no matter what, never leaves you for 1 second. So sometimes, you know, somebody might say, I felt my granny around me last night, and say they're going for an interview for a job, and they feel, you know, that their grandmother had said to them, you know, smile when you go for this interview, I'll be there to help you. You know, and that's what your guardian angel does at times, lets in the soul of someone you love.
Mm-hmm.
Or you would often hear someone say, when they were stressed most, they felt the presence could have been even of their mother around them, and that gave them courage and strength. But if you feel something that is negative, you know yourself, it is the other side, and you should just ask it to go away, to be gone, that you believe in God, and ask your guardian angel to protect you. And they will.
I'm quite surprised that you aren't doing healings or angel readings while you're on this tour. In my mind, it somehow legitimizes your work even more, but I wonder why you aren't doing that.
I don't do angel readings or that, but when people come to the book signings, I will bless them and ask for healing for them. I do that for everyone. When you hear even of people of other beliefs saying it's giving them back faith, isn't that wonderful? I hear from young people that are living in countries where it's really, really tough, and they tell me they didn't know they had a guardian angel, but now they know, and they're spreading the word with their friends, and they're saying they're all trying to be good because where they live, it's very hard to be good. And sure, that's beautiful.
You were asked to keep quiet about the angels for most of your life. Did that get any easier for you to do as you grew from a child into an adult?
No, it didn't actually. It was no problem to me to keep it a secret. I was allowed to tell my husband a little, but only a little. And I suppose you have to remember that God and the angels chose this time for the book Angels in My Hair to be published, you know, and chose this time for it to go around the world because people need it. They need the hope and the love that's in it. And that's even why I'm here in America, so I have to smile at that. I was told you must go to America, awaken the people. Definitely do my best, and I know the angels are doing their best as well, but the American people have to play their part too.
What was it like for you when one of your angels or some of your angels came to you and said, we want you to write a book?
Well, when I was a young child, they used to say it to me, and of course I took no notice of them, and they constantly reminded me of it. But one particular time was when I was married and I was wheeling the pram home with my young daughter in it, and she was asleep, and the angel Michael came up behind me teasing me. And when he did appear and make himself, you know, so human in appearance, he said to me, Lorna, you know, it's getting near time for you to start to write about God and the angels. And I always remember that particular time because I stopped and looked at him and I said, Michael, I can't even read or write properly. Never mind, write a book. And he just said, well, help will be sent. And I know it was a number of years later when I finally said yes. I always have to say yes in the end. But help has come. People all around the world that I haven't even met are helping. They're doing things. The first thing I did was put stuff on a tape. And then when people heard I was writing, because I had no money, and it was after my husband's death, someone gave me a laptop with a speakeasy. and I spoke into it and it prints out. It's absolutely brilliant. I just wish technology would get a little better. Because when the voice gets tired or you're you know...
Right, why can't it read your mind already?
I wish it would. You know, and I suppose you have to remember, angels are serious, but they're great fun as well. I would watch them mimicking people. When somebody is down, they'd be trying to cheer them up. I see them doing so many things that people don't realize. And they can be serious. They made me laugh and smile so many times. And I know sometimes they do that to people and they're unaware of it.
And so did you name the book Angels in My Hair, or was that another suggestion?
Well, I named the book Angels in My Hair because, you know, that's what the angels do and that's what a particular angel does as well. You know, pulls it. I always did.
Lorna, you have a beautiful prayer in your book that was given you by Archangel Michael.
That is correct. The day he gave me that as a child, I didn't know he was an archangel. I always give out to him for keeping it a secret, but he used to just smile at me in my bedroom when I was very, very tiny, and gradually we became friends. But I knew he was different than the other angels. It was just years later, you know, when I was about 14, he told me he was an archangel, and I was astonished. And on this particular day, he came with the prayer. I had gone into my bedroom to pray. My husband was still alive at this time, and Michael appeared, and all as I can say, he looked just so magnificent. He looked like a prince. You know, he was dressed in what I would call just a gown over him, you know, with gold and a belt. And from his knees down, there were straps down to sandals. But on the feet of the sandals, you know, the top part, there was a cross, a golden cross, and even thinking now of Michael at that time and just seeing how bright and how he glowed so much and his hair blowing in the wind, even though there was no wind in the bedroom. And his eyes always give what I would call a blue appearance. But his eyes are absolutely beautiful. It's like as if you can see for miles and miles down through them. Mm. And that evening he had a scroll in his hand and he told me to get out a pen and paper out of the drawer, and I did. And he started to read out this prayer. And at first I was having great difficulty writing it because being dyslexic, it was really difficult. And I remember saying to him, this is not working. And he reached out and touched me and I was able to write it. So I will say the prayer now. It's a prayer of thy healing angels that is carried from God by Michael, thy archangel. Pour out thy healing angels, thy heavenly host, upon all of your listeners and yourself, and upon those that you all love. Let them feel the beam of thy healing angels upon them, the light of your healing hand. I will let the healing begin, whatever way God grants it. Amen.
This was recorded on Lorna Byrne's first trip over to the United States from Ireland, and according to Lorna and her traveling companion, On a Wing and a Prayer. Her book is Angels in My Hair. For any guest information, to listen to archives, share resources, and sign up for notices of weekly programming, it's tributariesradio.wordpress.com. And for podcasting on iTunes, Tributaries Radio. I'm Robin Clare. Thanks for staying tuned.